Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
You talk about cost. What's the rough cost to American taxpayers since the roughly 4 million people have come into this country illegally since January of 2021, as those people show up at community hospitals, as they enter the school system, as they get other government help? Do you have a taxpayer cost?
Let me turn that question around a little bit, because I'm going to turn it around to match the question that an international partner asked of me. And the question that the international partner asked of me is, what is the economic cost of your broken immigration system? Since there are businesses around this country that are desperate for workers, there are desperate workers looking for jobs, desperate workers in foreign countries that are looking for jobs in the United States where they can earn money lawfully and send much needed remittances back home. What is the cost of a broken immigration system? That is the question that I am asked, and that is the question that I pose to Congress, because it is extraordinary.
So let me ask you what you think. That sounded like a guy who was prepared to have a spin for an for a question to which he had no answer. That's what that sounded like. Welcome to the program. That was Alejandro Mayorkas talking about the cost at the border. And it was a decent question. I mean, I think that was a legitimate question he was asked. Ooh, we're going to dive into that because a lot's happened over the weekend. So welcome. It's good to be back with you. We are starting our Monday off. This is, and I appreciate your grace for this, probably the craziest week of my life. Your hostess, your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash here with you. And appreciate my friend Sergio for taking over Friday. I have back-to-back graduations in a seven-day period. So that's why it's a little nuts beginning Friday to this Friday, coming Friday, last Friday to next Friday. So it's a little nuts. So I appreciate your patience and your understanding, because it's, well, you know how it is. You've got kids moving in, kids moving out, kids graduating, all the seniors. It's insane. So when you got two of them back to back, it's even crazier. And road trips and family, it's nuts. But we also have all of this. It's not as nuts as the border. It could be the border. It's my own personal border. But then that would make it sound like all these people were unwanted, so that's, or that they were breaking the law somehow by coming in illegally. All right. So this is, I mean, I really almost don't even have words, because what we've been seeing, just everything that we've been seeing as it relates to the border and the, well, I can't really say police, the enforcement of, I mean, that works too. We had this story, it's been insane. I mean, the initial video, I'm trying to get over the encampments, and I know that you all have seen at this point, I'm pretty sure that you all have seen all of the aerial footage of this. It is wild. I mean, just tents. And I mean, that now we have people who are receiving government issued cell phones. And then it was reported replete with photographs. Did you guys see? So Bill Malugin had talked about this. The immigration court wait time to adjudicate claims of asylum. Ooh, boy. So the immigration court wait time to determine whether or not someone can be an actual asylee is 5 years. So get this. There were pictures posted by reporters at the border who were, I mean, they were saying that, you know, these are pretty insane court dates, and that you're looking at 2026 and 2027. And later for some of these dates. Well, yeah, because it's like a 5-year thing. It's crazy. So I'm sure they're going to be like, okay, I'm going to really put this on my calendar and I'll be there. Yeah, I'm going to be there. Mm-hmm. That's how it's going to, right? Yeah. That's how it works, Kane. Isn't that how it works?
Oh, yeah.
Tell the people. That's how it works.
Oh, it's totally how it works.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. So they're getting these court dates, 2026, 2027. The backlog, a 5-year backlog. And it's going to lengthen. It's going to be even longer. And I have no words. The estimated wait times, and this is, some of these are taken from actual ICE. There's, for instance, independent observers and different, one of these is from ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement. Estimated wait times for pending asylum cases, because remember, everybody, when they come over, everyone's claiming that they're an asylee. They're not. I mean, such a small fraction of a percentage actually are legitimate asylum cases. The overwhelming, almost all of them are not. I mean, you have to meet a number of criteria in order to be considered an asylee for, you know, have a case of asylum. So Nebraska, interestingly, is the longest. It's almost 2,500 days. That's the average number. In California, it's about 1,800 days. In Florida, it's about 1,300 days. Same as New York. Texas is maybe about 1,600 days. New Jersey is over 2,000 days. Louisiana is almost to 2,000 days. This is on average. Nebraska is closing in on 2,500 days. That's just the average number of days to wait. So that's, yeah, you're looking at 5.5 years. I mean, 6 if you're pushing it. Although, I mean, now keep in mind the numbers that I'm giving you in terms of 5 years, that's just now. I have no idea what that's going to look like, you know, after this summer when everybody comes across the border. I have no clue what that's going to look like, and neither do you. That's just what they're estimating this to be at now. So the growth in the immigration court asylum backlog, the pending cases, and this comes from independent observers, ICE, Customs and Border Patrol, a number of agencies. Asylum seekers before immigration court. So at the fiscal year of 2012, there were over 100,000 asylum cases pending in the backlog, right? That has grown 7 times. So you're almost at 1 million. That was at the end of fiscal year 2022, back in September. In just 2 years, since then, in just 2 months, of fiscal year 2023, so that's October, November of 2023, it jumped by over October, November 2022. I'm looking at a lot of numbers here. So for the first 2 months of fiscal year 2023, that's October, November of last year, 2022, there were 30,000 new cases. So now the approximate total is 787,882. That's the backlog. It is an average of 5 years. That is wild. That's what we're looking at. And so these are cases that have not been adjudicated, meaning there has not been a judge that has sat on this case and has looked at the claims and determined whether or not they are legitimate. So it is going to exceed easily. I mean, what do you think, Kane? Maybe by June, end of June, it'll be easily over 1 million.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And when you have current crossings anywhere, and we talked about this last week, anywhere from, I mean, I think it's like 6,000 to 7,500 a day.
Yeah.
although I think it's actually going to increase. I think Del Rio, isn't Del Rio, they're the ones who push it up. Because I think theirs are like 7,200 something a day. And then you have the RGV sector, which is like 6,000 a day. And we're not even getting into some of the other border areas. I mean, there are others where you see, it's crazy. We're only talking about the ones where you see like over 5,000. We're not even talking about the ones where you see like 2,000 a day. Oh, they only get 2,000 crossings a day, Kane. That doesn't, I mean, granted, that's almost literally the size of the town in which I was born was 3,000 people. I mean, that's, we're sitting here like, oh no, this is only that many. Doesn't count. It's only that many. This is what we're looking at the border. I mean, this is crazy. Now, remember, they were trying to bring in all these judges and all of this stuff, and nobody shows up to these anyway. I mean, the average, I think, is less than half of the individuals who are slated for a court date show up. And do you honestly think that we have the this is a rhetorical question. Do you honestly think we have the capability of actually following up? And I'm pulling up my story back from the New York Times, wherein you had a little over 200,000 kids that were just lost to the immigration system after Alejandro Mayorkas demanded this faster processing. I mean, this is something else. So this is an absolute disaster that when you look at it, I don't know how Democrats are going to be able to walk away from it. I don't know how at least claim to walk away from any kind of blame for this, because they had a bill that was passed through the House. They refused to play ball. Whether it's the debt ceiling or immigration, they refused to negotiate. They refused to have any kind of debate over it at all whatsoever. This is on them at this point. Yes, there are a lot of Republicans that have been previously historically responsible for this. But at this point, this is on Dems. And they're racking up the L's on this. This is one of the things we're following today. Also, in addition to this, man, I'm just waiting for the indictment, any kind of Hunter Biden indictment here. Ex-CIA chief admitted that letter with 51 intel operatives, that it was political. He admits the obvious. As the agency conspired with the campaign to produce said letter, lobby for signatures on said letter, and then falsely claim that it was all Russian misinformation. John Brennan, following Clapper from last week, is finally admitting that, yes, it was political. It was a political thing that we did. His deposition came as former DNI, Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, he had made some remarks last week. He's expected to he's going to testify in just, 2 days? So he's testifying, I think, on Thursday. And they were two of the top intel officials who signed their name, and they were lobbied by the acting director of the CIA at the time, Mike Morrell, to sign their name on this. And there's all sorts of emails that prove this. We talked a little bit about this on Thursday of last week. They were actively involved in this. Now, on top of all of it, James Comer. This was wild. I saw this as a headline, and I actually had to go and run it down because I thought the headline was maybe perhaps misleading. So the House Oversight Committee chair, James Comer, he says that they're having trouble finding the informant who was the source of some of the corruption for the investigation surrounding the Biden family. And he was one of the original ones who informed Comer about the bribery scheme. Comer said that we can't track down the informant. He told this to Maria Bartiromo. And he says the whistleblower knows the informant. Yeah, they're missing. And there are a couple of other people that are missing. I'm sure that's all totally coincidental. We're going to dive into this and talk about this more. Also, the case of Daniel Penny. I wrote about this Thursday. He has been charged with manslaughter for the death of Jordan Neely. We're going to talk about this, break this down. This is as his defense fund is now approaching $2 million. We've got that. We've got wokery. We also have the Republican Party. And why are people now moderating in a primary? Meaning they're turning into moderates in a primary. We have to have a serious discussion about this and the influence of the absolute fecal show that is the Nat Con, which is basically the new boomers. No offense to you boomers, but you know what I mean. By the way, I don't have to sit here and couch every damn thing I say with an apology to someone who may have their feelings hurt. I think people can like give everybody the benefit of the doubt here, right? This isn't Babykins Radio, okay?
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So 50% of Chicagoans witness a shooting by the time they're 40. Can you imagine that's your life? Like, growing up in Chicago, have you seen your shooting yet? This is a new study because the crime is so out of control. Around 50% of Chicagoans will have personally encountered a shooting incident before reaching the age of 40 as a resulting skyrocketing crime. That's what's happening. The recent report published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, they said it was a comprehensive study that tracked the lives of Chicago residents from childhood to adolescence in the 90s, beginning and from that beginning till middle age. And they found 56% of Black and Hispanic Chicagoans have witnessed at least one shooting incident. One. At least one. By the time they reached the age of 40. And the study group, they said that there were 7% that experienced themselves having been shot. This is just unbelievable. That's how bad the crime in Chicago is. To say nothing of San Francisco. We got some of that coming up here. Argentina has ramped up their interest rate to 97% to combat inflation. That hurt me. That hurt me. I just I think I got the air knocked out of me. That's crazy. Remote work comes with daytime drug and drinking habits. Wow. Is anyone actually shocked about this? No. That's what happened. When you send everyone home to work, guess what? They start drinking. That's what, especially when you lock them down and they don't get to do anything else for like 2 years. We're still feeling the effects of that. According to Reuters, the U.S. has demanded a recall of 67 million airbag inflators. They said that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, 67 million of them, they said that there's a safety defect, but auto supplier ARC Automotive Inc. rejected the request, according to documents on Friday. The auto agency said that inflators pose a unreasonable risk of death or injury, but they said ARC has not made a defect determination that would require a recall of this population. So, in fact, the agency is fighting with the actual manufacturer there. We have a lot more on the way. The latest in the Daniel Penny case and the GOP. Stick with us. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
I'm not going to lie to the American people. Nothing's going to happen if we don't get 60 votes in the Senate. We're not even close to that on the Republican or the Democrat side. Why try and divide people further? Why not talk about the fact that we should be trying to save as many babies as possible and support as many mothers as possible? I think the media has tried to divide them by saying we have to decide certain weeks. In states, yes. At the federal level, it's not realistic. It's not being honest with the American people.
So we got to have a discussion about this because it's becoming more than just an aggravation to me. Welcome back to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash, here on this issue. One of the things that I'm planning on doing here as we go throughout the summer is have a discussion about national conservatism. It is not conservatism total. It is this movement that is incredibly reminiscent of some stuff that we saw in the 70s and 80s that led to the boondoggle of the quote-unquote Bushy compassionate conservatism of the 90s. And we got to have a discussion about it because it's coming up again. This happens like every cycle. Every now and then you have other people who, you know, younger generations who come up and they don't recognize that we've already done this and it didn't work. In fact, it's one of the reasons why everything that they're pushing now for national conservatism is literally one of the reasons why I never pledge myself to the Republican Party, because it's big government centric. And part of it is some of what Haley is describing here. So first off, her entire answer is a misdirect. Her answer only makes sense if you presuppose that anyone on the right, other than Lindsey Graham, who's literally the only person who did this, that anyone on the right is proposing any kind of federal abortion, anything. Because nobody is. Now, I know that there are people who say that they would like to establish, you know, as it is forever enshrined in the Declaration of Independence, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, i.e. one cannot have liberty and pursue happiness without existing. I understand the argument that there should be some sort of federal establishment of that. But at the same time, we also have to take this slow and take it step by step and work on saving as many lives as possible. And doing this state by state and allowing states to make their own determinations. First off, that's not only the way to do this, but constitutionally it is the way to do this. Especially with Roe v. Wade, which was so ridiculously... Roe v. Wade was structured to cave in on itself because the left had it set up around the issue of privacy. They tried to make it a right to... anything that they could try to fabricate into some sort of tent pole to make this thing work. That's what they used it as, and it collapsed. They did this themselves. Nobody did this. As I said before many times, Ruth Bader Ginsburg warned the left that this was going to happen, and they did not listen. They could have done this all these years. They could have done something state by state and protected what they wanted to or what they claimed, and they never did anything. Now, back to this particular case. This is all in response to, and they're focusing on DeSantis, even though other governors have done this. I mean, for crying out loud, look at Georgia and some of these other states that have passed restrictions on abortion as birth control. And that's what we're talking about, because every single state has, I'm going to say this once because I'm so tired of saying this. Every single state has protections for the life of the mother with regards to rape or incest. Every single state has protections. Every single state has protections. Every Ingle say eight stay as hay protections pay for Pig Latin. Now, that aside, Haley's response only makes sense if you think that the Republican Party or any contender or anyone is arguing for something nationally. There, she's talking about the media trying to bait people while she's taking the media's bait, which I find so ironic. Because the media is trying to get the Republicans to invert and turn on themselves. They want inter-party fighting. And they think that they're going to be able to do this. I go back to this abortion situation with Florida. And they target DeSantis, even though other governors and Republican state legislators have done this. They target DeSantis because they're expecting him to announce and they think he's going to be a front runner and they're trying to get ahead of it. So they're trying to cut him down before he even announces. Now, as I said, I mentioned this on Twitter earlier. 6 weeks is less than the national number of like 12 to 15, which is where most everybody kind of like, that's the line that kind of everybody hits nationally. Although I have some polling that a lot of Republican primary voters like a 6 week, a lot of Trump voters like a 6 week. I got a lot of data on that. But that aside, this situation with the 6 week in Florida, instead of because you have Haley hitting DeSantis on this, Trump came out to suggest that it was too harsh because he was asked about this as well. I'm so tired of people taking the bait on this. He was asked about this as well in a piece that he thought that maybe that it was too harsh. He made this statement in an interview with The Messenger that was published today, and he wouldn't elaborate on his own stance. He just said that he has heard that there were pro-life voters that opposed DeSantis's bill. He said, quote, he has to do what he has to do. If you look at what he did, a lot of people don't know if he knew what he was doing. He signed 6 weeks, and many people within the pro-life movement felt that was too harsh. I don't know of anybody who felt that, actually. Because, and when he was asked whether or not he supports restrictions, he said, I'm looking at all options. So this is a play here, and it's also a misdirection. Because there's no one in the pro-life movement who felt that 6 weeks was too harsh in Florida, specifically. Literally no one. And by literally no one, I include the non-traditional Republican voters who were Democrats, who voted for Republicans, including DeSantis, in Florida. All of them ran on this issue. I'll repeat that. All of them ran on this issue. And they ended up winning in a historic landslide. every single statewide elected office went Republican. Every single state lawmaker office went Republican. Supermajority legislature. Miami-Dade and Palm Beach counties both, for the first time, went Republican. They eliminated the presence of Democrats in any statewide elected office at all across the state. And they ran on that issue. That was one of the issues upon which they ran. So instead, my thought is in this, and again, it was the 6 weeks. Instead of, which I don't understand this constantly throwing punches hysterically, maybe instead of trying to moderate candidates, moderating their positions instead of promoting, they should be promoting their own accomplishments. It's mind-blowing to me that instead they're trying to moderate themselves. Now, I'll say it again for the people in the back. What works in Florida doesn't necessarily work in Michigan. But again, they all ran on that issue last election and they won in a historic landslide. So maybe, just maybe, some of these Republicans could see how they're messaging in Florida. What did they, how did they message this that resulted in their securing a ton of non-traditional GOP voters last go around, while including this issue before hysterically throwing punches? The irony in this is they're saying that, well, there's no way that anyone's going to be able to get independence in that with this kind of messaging or this kind of position. I find that incredibly ironic, again, because they were able to get a ton of Democrats in Florida. Maybe you should check the messaging. And what works there may not work elsewhere. But no one who made that work in Florida is saying that it should work elsewhere. This is a presupposition. They're creating a straw man against which to argue so that they can make themselves look like the reasonable ones against DeSantis. Why are you moderating your position? Why is, and I'm going to say this, and you might get mad at me, but I want to know why Trump is suddenly running away from this issue. I mean, it was on his watch that, I mean, he was had the Supreme Court justices that helped to make the determination for Roe v. Wade. That he is not touting that accomplishment is one of the craziest damn things I have ever seen in politics. What the hell? That is the feather in a cap of any person who believes in individual accountability, who believes in conserving individual liberty, which is the definition of a conservative, before the government. Why is he not touting that? Why is he not running away from the issue? And I'm saying that's what it is. You might get mad at the way that I am describing it. I'm not characterizing it. I'm describing it. Big difference. Because he was pressed about this in this interview, and he would not say. If I were advising him, I would have told him, well, I would immediately go to Roe v. Wade and talk about how this works with the states, and this is the best direction, the best route in which to handle this issue. And then you can say, if you're pressed on it to give your answer, you can say, well, this is what I think. If you believe in 6 weeks, if you agree with it, then you can say, yes, this is what I believe. But I also believe that it's most important to save lives. And so if the national average is 12 to 15 weeks, it's a lot better than the abortion on demand taxpayer funded that Democrats are promoting. So that's the direction we need to go. There's your answer. That is how you handle that issue. The people that he have advising him are absolute shh.
Thank you.
You're welcome. They're garbage. It's almost cringe. The incompetency of the people advising him is a cringe level heretofore never seen in politics. He does not have the same people that he had in 2016, and it is evident. Because 2016 Trump would not have misdirected away from that, answering that. He would have had the answer. And you know this. You know it in your heart of hearts. It's why it makes you mad. You don't moderate yourself, especially when it was your administration that delivered the Supreme Court justices that enabled this conversation in the first place. Instead of running on that, you're going to sit here and attack somebody for doing what you would have done? I don't get this. It makes no sense to me. And as far as Nikki Haley, Nikki Haley's a stalking horse for Trump. I was willing to give her the benefit of the doubt, but now I'm not. She's a stalking horse for Trump. She will never, ever, on her own, win the office of the presidency. And she's, look, she's a very nice individual. I don't agree with her on a lot of foreign policy. And I think that she has a lot of, I think that some of her, she's got some big government positions. I also subscribe to the Reagan belief that my 80% friend is not my 20% enemy. But when it comes to a primary, you have to be very, very clinical and kind of harsh about it. Not in a mean way. And a lot of people on the right get their feelings hurt if you don't like their guy in the primary. It's not about liking a guy. It's like, what can win in November? If you can't, you got to be able to win. And here's the thing. Winning, I told you that a lot of people from the primary, they decide to run, they try to moderate themselves in the general. I see some of these Republican candidates doing that now. Y'all ain't never going to win the primary like that. And you don't moderate your position. You enhance your messaging. Holy cow. But I do believe that Haley's a stalking horse for Trump. And I also have a problem with some of this national conservatism stuff. I wanted to play for you. This is Vivek Ramaswamy. Audio soundbite 9. I want you to listen to this soundbite. I addressed this on social media once, but I want you to hear this.
That is why today I'm announcing my support for a new amendment to the U.S. Constitution. That amendment would raise the voting age in this country from 18 to 25, but still tell you that you can vote at 18 if you either do service to this country 6 months in the military or 6 months as a first responder, or else at least pass the same civics test that we make an immigrant pass to actually become a voting citizen in this country.
So here's why I disagree with that. Now, do I like the idea of raising the voting age? I do, actually. But I like the idea of it, but that doesn't mean that I support it, because I'm trying to figure out how practically that would work. You want someone to go serve in the military, but you also don't. I mean, you got to refine a lot of stuff. But specifically on his spot, on his quote here, he had tweeted out, this was a few days ago, that young people no longer value a country that they simply inherit. I kind of have a problem with that statement a little bit. I'm going to come back to that. He says people value something more if they have a stake in creating. That's why I'm proposing the constitutional amendment that requires 18-year-olds to pass. And, you know, you heard the details. Here's my issue with this. This should not be a more government solution. We are in this position exactly because of more government. It's not government raising these kids, it's families. I agree that there are government policies pushed by certain political ideologies that contribute to the breakdown of the very family structure that should give us people who value the country in which they're born and do not. I get that. But at the same time, you cannot fix a societal problem with a government policy. That is my issue. We've got more on this. I have some exciting news for those of you who wish that you could be nearer to Hillsdale College. Now, you can be a part of Hillsdale, no matter where you are in the world. In addition to their free online courses, Hillsdale College has created something new, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It allows you to learn even more from Hillsdale anywhere at any time. And on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, you'll hear podcasts that feature conversations with Hillsdale College faculty, staff, friends, alumni, as well as visiting speakers and authors discussing everything from philosophy to theology to history, economics, politics, and current events. Listen to hundreds of episodes on the network, from the Hillsdale Dialogues to the radio-free Hillsdale Hour to the Larry Arnn Show, all for free. Get informed and entertained at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com, and learn more about their free online courses and the new Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, changing hearts.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Well, Steve Doocy from Fox himself asked, he said, there's no evidence of anything illegal and there's no evidence of anything that ties it to President Biden. I wish the House Oversight Committee would spend more time worrying about the ordinary income of Americans going up than they are worried about the income of Hunter Biden.
That's funny because they're directly linked. Yeah. Because they're pushing a green energy thing that they got money for, and that does actually directly affect. And I didn't know that Ro Khanna, who is the lawmaker here talking about this, I didn't know that he was involved in the FBI ongoing investigation that started in 2018 because of the 170 suspicious activity things that were filed because the family wasn't disclosing all the cash money that they were making from this CCP. This is it's the fact of it. Those are facts. Hashtag facts. F-A-C-K-S. Facts.
What's what they do for 4 years?
Right, exactly. Russia. We have a whole other hour. A whole dang hour on the way. And you don't want to miss it. Because we have to talk about wokery and the Miller Lite ad and national conservatism and the left and immigration and all kinds of stuff. So much fun. Sit with us. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes. And you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Are you at risk of losing your job to AI? Although some jobs will be eliminated, more jobs could be created. As the fears of artificial intelligence grow, will creative destruction work in this decade? What should you do to prepare? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
To choose love over hate, unity over disunion, progress over retreat, to stand up against the poison of white supremacy as I did in my inaugural address to single out as the most dangerous terrorist threat to our homeland is white supremacy. I'm not saying this because I'm at a black HBCU.
Yeah, you are. You're totally saying that because, by the way, HBCU is a historically black college or university. Yeah. So isn't that kind of a redundancy? It's a black historical black college. It's, you know, as opposed to the white ones, which are devils. Welcome back to the program. Second hour of our show. Your host, Tess, Dana Lash here with you. And I got a lot of stuff.
He's a unifier, isn't he? He's a unifier.
You know, he's all about the unity, Kane. He's President McUnity. He is all about the unity, and he's all about, unity.
The truth, unity,
that stuff. I sound that sounds like, what is it, Kylie Jenner, that one soundbite that never gets old. Like, this is the era of, like, realizing stuff. It's my favorite soundbite ever. And I think it's also very Nat Connie. You got it, don't you? Are you pulling it up right now for the people? The people? Here, check this out. This is what we're talking about.
The new energy. And I feel like this year is really about, like, the year of just realizing stuff. And everyone around me, we're all just, like, realizing things.
Like, wow. That is those things over there. Wow, that stuff. It's crazy. Like realizing things. That's Biden. Like, I don't know. I don't get these people. I don't get this. But he's saying that because he's at a black college. He's saying that. Like how Hillary Clinton, you know, someone gave that woman a thing of hot sauce. And she's like, well, I do have hot sauce in my purse. Like Elizabeth Warren. Hey, sweetie, would you like a beer? No one ever knows. No one knows. No one, everybody knows that woman does not drink beer. And her husband looks shocked like, the hell is this? who are you and what have you done with my wife? What? Hi, sweetie. Would you like a beer? Holds it up. He slaps it out of her hand. That's not even the beer I like. Runs away. No. Anyway. So. Oh, man, y'all. I don't even know. That's there's just no way. No way at all. I can't. I don't know. Speaking of beer. Because he's, first off, Biden's playing. It really, still we're doing the most dangerous threat. Where's this at? I have this on my rundown. Forgive me. I got distracted because of some stupid story and I was reading it on break. This whole like play for this, what did they have? What was it? The group, the Patriot Front?
Yeah, the Patriot Front.
Did they came out or something over the weekend to jog or something like that? What was happening? What was the story behind this? I had one of my first graduations. My oldest graduated college, and I'm a young collegiate parent. And then my youngest, I have another graduation coming up from my youngest son, and so I didn't watch, you know, what the Fed boys. Oh, I'm sorry, the Patriot Faux Front was doing.
You got it right.
Yeah.
You got it right.
So did they? Who? This is such. I'm sorry. This is a psyop. I think it's a psyop. I think it was a psyop, too, to tell everyone that the country was shutting down so that Donald Trump could arrest child predators. I think that was a way. I wonder if the CIA put that out there to get to the, because they thought that was going to be a way to get people on the right to stay home. I have thoughts. Anyway, so the where did they have a little thingy over the weekend?
Yeah.
Is that what it was? I'm asking this because I just watched them run down some stairs on a video.
Yeah, all coordinated.
Who are these people? Why are they not like following them back to Quantico? I mean, why are they not following them back to wherever they come from? they follow these people all around with all kinds of video, and no one asks them any questions. What? Who are these people? Are they just they look kind of like. They just didn't put the FBI logos on the pullovers. I mean, what? These are Fed boys.
Oh, no doubt.
But did they have their little thingy over the weekend? Is that what it was, Kane? Because, and then you have, so that Biden could go out there and say what he said at the college?
Yes. So that the white supremacy lie would seem more true.
So you have a bunch of guys that, and I do like what Rogan said about them. They're all, there's no, where are the fat ones?
Exactly.
Where are the fat chicks at? Yeah, they're all dudes, but where are the fat ones? And he's right on that.
Yep.
But why, they all run in lockstep. Are they Buds rejects? Like, what are they?
Yeah.
I agree with what was that? I agree with that. So Biden comes out and says, oh, it's the biggest terrorist threat to our homeland is the white supremacy. The only white supremacy that I saw was the Antifa burning down black communities. And everyone goes, oh, it's just a mostly peaceful protest. Ignore these white people that are terrorizing these black communities because they're on the left. It's Antifa. They're forgiven. We're the black black people. Where they all went to Hot Topic and they got the same black hoodies and the same black pants. And they wore the kerchiefs over their faces because they thought it looked cool. They look like revolutionaries when really they look like stooges. I just don't. Yeah, they wore this. So the Patriot Front people, they had the gaiters, the neck gaiters over their faces. And literally nobody believes that these are not Fed boys. Not a single person. I don't trust anybody now. Nobody. Just. You can't, and especially in a time when everybody's an activist, you can't trust anybody. You really can't. I don't know. But his remarks there. But he did say that just because he was in a black, he was in front of a black college. I wonder what, who's the guy, who was the grand lizard or whatever that they.
Robert Byrd?
Yeah, Robert Byrd, the guy who literally said the N-word on NBC and Matt Lauer almost had a stroke. He was like, there's some good and bad. And Matt Lauer's like, what? What did you just say? You're totally undercutting the reason I'm doing this interview. Joe Biden, didn't he eulogize him? Yeah. Or as probably Karine Jean-Pierre and Zoolander would say, you googly. They you googlized him. So I just, that's a long way from that. He's the guy who literally gave the eulogy for the Grand Lizard, who is now saying, oh, it's people like me are the greatest threat to the country. Oh, man, I can't. You can't make this up. Can we talk about this commercial here real quick with Miller Lite, since I brought up the Elizabeth Warren thing with beer? This will be a nice segue into wokery. So is this their, this is their real actual commercial? So if you're unfamiliar, and if you're just joining us and listening to the show across the country or watching the simulcast on YouTube, Facebook, or Channel 347 DirecTV, apparently, so Miller Lite came out with a beer commercial where it's chicks. So they're at least recognizing women, but they're still playing into this old trope, this old feminist trope, as a way to check a woke box. Oh, no, we don't want to look like the alternative to Bud Light like that. We don't want to sell beer either. Here we go. I mean, that's what this is. Can we play some of this ad? It's all censored. But it's a chick who's mad. She's taking issue with women in bikinis being used for beer commercials as though they're objecting. Women, first off, I reject this entirely. Nobody forced women into bikinis. Okay, women were fine back in the day. They wanted to wear bikinis to the beach and they were told not to. And they're like, we're going to wear the bikinis. So now they're acting like they were forced into them when that absolutely wasn't true. Women like looking attractive and they like feeling fit. We do. We like it. We enjoy it. So this is this commercial. I guess that they wanted to shoot themselves in the foot. The Miller Lite people. You knew this was coming. I could have told you this. Yeah. Here, hold my beer, says Miller Lite. Do we have it?
Here's a little known fact. Women were among the very first to brew beer ever. From Mesopotamia to the Middle Ages to colonial America, women were the ones doing the brewing. Centuries later, how did the industry pay homage to the founding mothers of beer? They put us in bikinis.
Oh, they did?
Wow. Look at this shit. Wild. It's time beer made it up to women. So today, Miller Lite is on a mission to clean up not just their shit, but the whole beer industry's shit. Miller Lite has been scouring the internet for all this shit and buying it back so that they can turn it into good shit for women brewers. Literally, good shit. How, you ask? Ladies, take it away.
First, we turn the bad shit into compost. Then we feed compost to worms. Push out beautiful fertilizer.
That good shit helps farmers grow quality hops.
Which is then donated to women brewers to make their own really good shit.
Really?
There's definitely more shit out there.
Broads can make
in your
beer.
Attic, in the garage, in your parents' basement. Send any shit you got into Miller Lite, and they'll turn that into good shit too.
I mean, I have no words. This is so dumb. A smart woman would look at this and be like, mm-hmm, you're right. Women were able to convince men to do the labor for us and high five themselves. But instead, they're bitching about it. What is wrong with you? Feminism has convinced you to get mad that your previous female leaders convinced dudes to do your work for you. If you brought about brewing, then you got the men to do it. If just assuming, I love how they assume that everything is run by dudes. And you're complaining about that? Because why? Why? I don't get it. That's so dumb. And to play into this old trope, nobody forced women into bikinis. Oh my gosh, nobody forced you into a bikini. A dude created it, and then y'all wanted to wear it. And a lot of y'all back in the history incurred fines for daring to wear it on a beach. And now you're like, it's like they turn into these Neo-Puritans. You forced us into bikinis. Forced. I mean, let's ignore the fact that boob jobs are like super popular and like all these women get all this stuff done. How dare you do this to us? I mean, there's nothing wrong with women wanting to look attractive and feel fit. There's nothing wrong with us. I think that's a lie of feminism, that it shames you into thinking that you should feel bad for that. Girls, you know when you look good. You know when you look good. Because I see y'all with all y'all selfies and all y'all on Instagram. And I see my 40-something-year-old friends that do this. You know that you like it. And if you say you don't, you're a lying, liar, and you are immediately ejected from the conversation because you can't be truthful. Like I said, smart women would look at this and go, yeah, good job, us ladies. We convinced the men to do the work for us. So Miller's trying to recognize women, but at the same time,
crap on men.
Yeah. Jeez. Guys, look at us. We're going to say this bad word over and over again. We're edgy. We're calling. I really don't know that I want beer that's called shh. You know? The good shh. I really don't think that I want that beer. If you're actually calling it that, it might taste like it. And going by your attitude and your reasoning, it's probably a safe bet that it does. Just saying. Man. All right, we got more. I hate everything. You can't even tell parody from reality anymore because the world is awful. Everything's dumb.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Brittany Griner stood for the Star Spangled Banner. Look at that. Brittany Griner stood for the anthem, and apparently she said that it hit different this time. You think? She said, quote, here in the national anthem, it definitely hit different. Yeah. Yeah, you think so? Welcome to what we've been saying all along. Welcome. Also, the Bed Bath & Beyond, they have gone to the Beyond. And now pickleball is like the new Spirit Halloween, apparently. It's coming to your local mall, replacing all the closed Bed Bath, Beyond, Old Navy, and Saks Off Fifth stores. Is pickleball really that crazy? Like, what? What is wrong with people? Whoa. I don't know. Does Juan, do you play pickleball? Oh. I don't, he said, hell no. He does not play pickleball. I just wonder. I mean, they're going everywhere. Do you have people? We got to have a whole segment about this here coming up. Also, I like this name. This woman, her name is Thor Kill. That's literally her name. Convicted for felony possession of ammunition. What does that mean? She's a prohibited person. She's not allowed to have ammo. It was a misdemeanor lawsuit. And so she's 45 years old. Her actual literal name is Thor Kill.
Wow.
Thor Kill. Now, why couldn't I have been named that? That's the Thor Kill show, right? Oh, yeah. Stay with us. We got more in store.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
Things are going at the border, sir.
Much better than you all expected.
Do you have any plans to visit the border?
No, I think. Pardon me?
Do you have any plans to visit the border?
Not in the near term, no. No, just be disruptive, not anything else.
Yeah, of course he doesn't. He has no... He's trying to ride a bike and not fall over, guys. Come on. Come on. He's just trying to ride his bike and not fall over. That was Joe Biden talking about the situation as it relates to immigration here. He says that it's fine. He was actually saying that it's, you know, it's so much better and it's, you know, it's going down. Nobody believes any of that. I wanted to highlight for you, this is Bill Malugin, Audio Soundbite 18, his report about terrorists that are coming across the border. Now, we've known that this has happened before in different sectors because other Border Patrol chiefs have discussed it and every week they give you the readout of, you know, who they've captured, the known gotaways, the criminals, you know, what they've been previously arrested for, how many have been previously deported. Listen to what Bill Malugin reported from over the weekend.
What I'm hearing from multiple CBP sources is that on Wednesday, Border Patrol agents in the San Diego sector arrested an Afghan national who crossed illegally and was later deemed to be a match on the FBI's terror watch list. Take a look at this map right here. I'm told it happened in Otay Mesa, inland San Diego County. I'm told this person crossed in a group with migrants. They were apprehended by San Diego sector agents. They took them back to the station, ran their fingerprints and databases, and that is when they got the watch list hit. I'm told the FBI later confirmed that was a match, and the FBI is now the lead on this investigation.
Wow. Wow. It was that's from the open border. And that's just what we know. We have no, I mean, can you imagine what, I don't even want to think about it. I had this story too of this is a nightmare. This right here. I was thinking about putting it at my Florida man section, but I thought, no, this really actually is makes so much more sense with this. Can you imagine you have your wedding, right? You and everybody knows how much, you know, on average, people, how much time they spend planning their wedding, how much money they spend on their wedding. So this couple, Gary Moretti and Deanna Mifsud, were left devastated after Crossroads Hotel in Newburgh, New York, canceled 30 rooms they had booked for their wedding guests. The hotel rooms are now going to be used for illegal immigrants who are being bused to upstate New York because they said that New York City is feeling such pressure, which is wild because New York City isn't even getting like an eighth of what border towns are getting. I mean, not even like hardly anything. How many? Up to 7,500 really a day crossing. Wow. And they were saying that the city is busting at the seams. Kathy Hochul was telling Al Sharpton that the city is teeming with people here illegally. Listen to this. This is from this Sunday, I believe.
Well, Reverend Al, hearing the numbers going down is good news, but it's small comfort to us because the word we're getting is that the majority of these individuals who are crossing, and still high numbers, are coming to New York State. And we already have over 61,000, over 40,000 housed in New York City. They're bursting at the seams, and Mayor Adams is doing the very best he can in a difficult situation. We have stepped in $1 billion from the state budget I just enacted. Wow. We also are giving legal help to people, and now we're in the position of trying to help find places for these individuals. I asked the federal government to give us emergency funding. I'm asking for federal installations, like military installations to help out.
She said the city's just bursting at the seams. Imagine. They're only dealing with just like a little bit of what border towns are dealing with. Now, this couple, the Crossroads Hotel, it's going to cost them about $20,000. They're rushing to try to find accommodations for family coming in for their wedding. 160 people. They're turning conservatives, turning all these Democrats into conservatives. Moretti said that the move, he said, quote, it's absolutely upsetting how they're treating people. How do taxpaying people have to deal with us? Or why do taxpaying people have to deal with us? Wedding guests coming from out of country. They said they played it off like nothing. They said it's they found out that a lot of these hotels upstate were accepting large number of illegal entrants. And so they called the management company for the hotel because they were concerned. And the hotel told them, you don't have to be concerned because it's all canceled. Holy cow. All these people coming across the border illegally. And that's everyone else has to accommodate. And so that's just, I mean, you had the story too. Texas over the weekend sent more illegal entrants to Kamala Harris's house. This was on Sunday. They had local TV crews showing illegal entrants getting off the bus outside the Naval Observatory at about 8:30 p.m. Sunday. And they came from the Del Rio sector. They started to arrive last week. And the Texas governor said Texas had bused more than 17,000 illegal entrants to sanctuary cities. 9,200 he sent to Washington. Not the first time, won't be the last time. So I'm just curious. I'm sure that all these sanctuary cities are rolling out the red carpet, right? Because that's what we were told, that they are sanctuary cities. That's their words. In the meantime, there's like a 5-year backlog for these court dates. Also, what happened? So Friday, when I was headed to West Texas, my oldest son graduated from college and he's going to be preparing to study constitutional law. Got to train them up, parents. So, speaking of law and self-defense, etc., Daniel Penny was charged. I wrote about this. I wrote about this a few days ago. The whole legal debate hinges upon whether or not Penny's use of the rear naked choke was excessive, and that's one of the reasons why we had on Tim Kennedy last week to give a break, because Tim Kennedy teaches this, and it's an incredibly safe maneuver. However, it, if you're on drugs like Jordan Neely was, or if you have any other health issues, it might compound the situation, but you don't know. That's the thing. I mean, are these innocent passengers on the subway, are they supposed to know that this guy was quote unquote self-medicating, that was his family's words, on quote unquote spice? And that, well, if you're going to defend yourself, be very careful, like, so you don't hurt him. Were they supposed to know this? Because he was screaming, per witnesses, he was screaming that he was going to kill passengers. You keep hearing this over and over from the left. Well, someone just yelling on the train doesn't mean you kill them, except that's not what was happening. A new witness had stepped up via New York Post, and they said that Penny didn't engage until Neely started threatening that he was going to kill other passengers. They said that Neely did nothing, that he sat there, he did not engage, he didn't do anything, and Neely was going on and on and on and getting more and more aggressive, growing more and more hostile. And they said that the witness said that it wasn't until he said that he was going to start killing people on the train that it, and that Penny and others stepped up. And she said, quote, Neely screamed, "I will kill a blank blanker. I don't care. I'll take a bullet. I'll go to jail," and was screaming that he was going to kill them all. That's what the witness says. That's one of the first witnesses. She's a 66-year-old woman. She did not want to be identified. And she said, she told the New York Post that she immediately went up to Penny after this and said, thank you. Because remember, he has a history, and there's more than one, of punching elderly people in the face. And the warrant that was out for Neely's arrest was the most recent, where he punched a 67-year-old woman in the face. And he had previously repeatedly tried to shove people onto the subway tracks, according to a million witnesses. And he had apparently gotten in trouble with police for that. So he was very violent, and he had demonstrated, because when you ride the subway in New York, and this is what people, I guess, don't understand. They're like, well, how do you know he was? When you ride the subway in New York, this guy was well known. You hear all these people saying, oh, he was a Michael Jackson impersonator. He was a well-known figure within that area of the subway, and so well known that there was a Reddit thread about him that predates this. And in the Reddit thread, they were even talking about how, don't go near this guy anymore, he doesn't even do Michael Jackson impersonations, he's just violent and dangerous, and be very careful. That's what people were saying on Reddit. So now you can understand the context a little bit more as to why someone might feel that their life was, there was, it was a credible threat and their life was in danger. So he's charged, and I mean, it seems like it might be political. I don't know. Because I just don't know how you get I don't even know how you get manslaughter out of this, because that's the charge. And I wrote about this on Substack. They said that he's going to be arrested. He had turned himself in on a manslaughter charge, second-degree manslaughter. And they said that he was arraigned. So here's what gets me. Neely's uncle, Christopher Neely, said he was disappointed that Penny was being charged with manslaughter and not murder. He told the press, quote, manslaughter suggests an accident. This was no accident. There was intent to kill, and that's murder. I'm going to tell you something. If Daniel Penny is responsible for killing Jordan Neely, then Neely's family is culpable for not caring until he scared passengers enough that some of them felt compelled to defend themselves, particularly Penny. So where was this uncle when Jordan Neely was going through the throes of addiction? Where was this uncle when Jordan Neely was punching elderly passengers in the face? That could have killed them. You want to talk about intent to kill? Where was this uncle when Jordan Neely was trying to push people onto subway tracks? That could have killed them. That was intent to kill. Were they not concerned that he was homeless and claimed to be starving? They're concerned enough now that there could be money in it, apparently, to tell the press that Penny is a murderer. But they weren't concerned enough to get their family member help when he began assaulting people. They weren't concerned enough then to get him off the streets, to get him shelter, to get him a roof. You tell me here, who's the crueler party? It's always these people who are absent when the deceased needed help the most. And they are the loudest with their demonstrations of grief after. They want to honor Jordan Neely's memory, but they weren't there to honor his life when he needed it. So we're going to follow this. There is a GoFundMe, and I'm going to make sure to send that out to you. They have $2 million raised. And I'm going to tell you something. These cases are expensive. That might seem like a lot of money to you, but I guarantee you every cent of it's going to be spent, because this is going to be a case that's going to go on for some time. This is an attack on self-defense. They want to ban the guns, but they also want to stop you from being able to defend yourself against the crime that they help create, the recidivism that is brought about by their restorative justice criminal coddling policies.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So this is actually pretty amazing. A 13-year-old, very brave 13-year-old Florida girl, legit fought off a shark at a Florida beach. Man, Florida girls are hardcore. You didn't know I messed with 13-year-old Florida girl. Ella Reed was sitting in shallow water with her friend near a jetty at Fort Pierce Beach when she felt a sharp pain on her side. She said that she said the thing she felt the most was it hitting my stomach really hard. She said she punched the shark as it approached her, and then it swam away, swam right back. She said it wouldn't leave me alone, so I had to use my arm and hand too. It got my arm and my finger, she said. She was approached again by the shark. She called for her mom and brother. Her mom was in shock after seeing the shark swimming around her daughter, and she was covered in blood from head to toe. The mom couldn't see what was going on. She got 19 stitches. She was bit in the stomach, arm, finger, and top of her knee. She's going to be okay. She said she's a Florida native, never been afraid of the ocean. She says she's going to get back in the water. But they believe it was a bull shark about 5 to 6 feet long. And she said those are actually pretty hardcore scars to have. That's like pretty amazing. But she punched it. And she sounds like so calm and cool about it. Yeah, so it swam up and I just punched it. And I mean, that's kind of awesome. Oh, man. Because I think, I don't know that I would have been like that. It's a shark. I don't like snakes in the water, crickets anywhere, or I don't want a shark like right there by me, but I'm okay with it at a distance. I don't know.
Stitches.
Yeah. So there was a guy a Florida man who broke the record for the longest time living underwater. He's a Florida University professor. Longest time. He said he's not ending his subaquatic lifestyle just yet. 74 years old. He's going to make it to 100 days underwater. Why? He lives in like this thingy. This like little undersea lodge is what it's called.
A pineapple under the sea?
Yeah. He's a human SpongeBob, dude. That's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's going to try to make it. It's 74 days. He's going to try to make it to 100. And, I guess they're studying it. I couldn't do that because, they have divers that go down and wave at him and
wouldn't
stuff.
Pressure be a lot down there?
I would think so. There's a woman who's handing out free donuts only to raccoons though, at a drive through. I just heard a few people go, oh yeah, oh yeah, they usually go to the Dunkin' Donuts dumpster in New Smyrna Beach and they get the old ones, but now these little trash pandas, they want them fresh, so they're coming up and they're handing them out. This woman's handing them out, and there's video of it, and they are hysterical, and they're looking at the cars coming up like, can I come, can I get, can
exactly
I just
where to go.
They know exactly yes, it's
exactly,
and it kind of makes me want some raccoons. I don't know if that's like a good thing to have. I don't know. Have you seen the videos where the old man feeds these raccoons and they're all under his deck and it's like Night of the Living Dead and their little hands, paws, whatever, come up and they're grabbing at food? I mean, I don't know. I kind of want my own little army of raccoons. All right. We have a lot more on the way. We've been talking about the Daniel Penny case. We also have the latest with the border. We also have the latest with the Bidens. Kim Gardner, the last ignorant thing that she did on her way out. Wait until you hear this. Stick with us.
Year.
But it does sound like you got to do it within the construct of, look, you're probably not going to be able to regulate much having to do with access to the gun by anybody over 18.
Well, listen, if the Supreme Court eventually says that states or the Congress can't pass universal background checks or can't take these assault weapons off the streets, I think there's going to be a popular revolt over that policy. A court that's already pretty illegitimate is going to be in full crisis mode.
Really? So that's Senator Chris Murphy, who says that if the Supreme Court says that states or Congress can't pass a gun registry, which is the what they call a universal background check, because you have to have a gun registry for it. We have background checks. And then there's going to be a popular revolt. It sounds like he's threatening violence. That sounds like terrorism. I was told that that's an insurgency. Terrorism. That sounds like domestic terrorism. Tell the FBI. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Your lovable curmudgeon. And of course, you can listen to the radio program across the country. You can stream it. You can also watch the simulcast as well on YouTube, Facebook. We always have good discussions on YouTube and Channel 347 on DirecTV. Oh, boy, I have a couple of stories I want to get to you here. But first off, this remark by Chris Murphy, the issue isn't whether or not we have background checks, we do. What they want are things that exist already in states and they have not worked. California was one of the first states to have them, and you've had a handful of mass casualty, sadly, mass casualty incidents there. The reason that I bring this up is because these are not things that at all contribute to any kind of solution. They do not help. First off, they can't even, you can't actually even implement them, number one. Number two, they're not workable. You can't implement it. You don't have the infrastructure to implement. It's not workable. Three, it's also illegal because there's already a federal law barring the federal government from being able to collect data via a registry. You absolutely have to have a registry in order for this to work. To track every firearm purchase, you have to have a registry to do that. I mean, that's just the basic matter of it. It's not about the guns, which brings me to this story that I'm going to share with you right now. This is one of, I was just telling Kane about this. This is enraging. You all remember the horrible story with, this took place in Texas. The shooting that took place at the mall in Allen, Texas. 8 people were killed. 7 others wounded. And authorities were looking at the social media presence of the killer. And while all this happened, you had a guy who came forward and he was telling a pretty amazing story. This guy, his name is Fred Steven Spanauer. He's a state Democrat executive committee member. And he apparently lied to everyone about what he did. He is on camera telling KTVT that he performed CPR on 3 victims. None of them could be saved. He said that it was unfathomable to see the carnage. He said that he saved a child from under dead bodies. And then he was called a liar by the police. The Allen Police Department issued a statement. And of course, it had to be reported by the BBC. Our own press isn't all over this, but the BBC is. The Allen Police Department issued a statement saying they wanted to inform the public of discrepancies with statements made by a witness to several media outlets. They said that the shooting at Allen Premium Outlets, Mr. Steven Spanauer of McKinney, gave multiple public accounts of his actions. They said inconsistencies between these public accounts and investigative facts led Allen Police Department to conduct a follow-up interview, and the detectives determined that Mr. Spanauer is not a credible witness. They said he arrived between 3:44 and 3:52, and he was not, like he said, first on scene, nor was he even on the property when the shooting was occurring, unlike what he was telling everyone. He did not perform CPR. He did not administer first aid. He did not move a deceased mother covering a live child. What an absolute ghoul. This individual, a state Democrat executive committee member, goes to the press and lies about where he was and what he was doing when a shooting occurs. He's not just not a credible witness. He is a ghoulish liar. Oh my gosh. Who does that? Who sits here and lies? Who makes up a story to the press and lies about recovering a live child from the dead mother? Who goes to the press on camera and talks about and lies about giving first aid to people? Who does that? This guy. This is one of the most ghoulish things I've ever heard. Stephen Spainhour, Spainhouer, goes on camera. Wasn't even there, apparently. At least not when it was occurring. Telling everyone, oh yeah, I was there when it was out. I just went there. He didn't do any of that, according to the detectives investigating this. They thought it was weird what he was saying, so they go and try to get more facts, and they find out he's lying. Do you think that Democrats have an obligation, Kane, to issue a statement condemning and lying about mass casualty incidents?
Oh, for sure. Where's your Disinformation Governance Board?
Now, yeah, where's the Disinformation Governance Board exactly? One of a Moms at Arms contributor at momatarms.com, they said that not only was he lying about it, he got fired from his job as a cop, and he was also previously indicted for election fraud. This Democrat, the one who was lying to the press. Like, why would, first off, can I just ask like a totally obvious question? Just let, apart from the ghoulishness of this whole, that whole story, how are you a guy who gets fired for being a bad cop and who is apparently indicted for election fraud? How do you then go on television knowing that you're going on camera and that this is probably going to be played and you lie about this stuff that can be easily determined false? What is your damage? Who does that? Like, who owns themselves like that? Don't you? I mean, did he not think that he was going to get found out? Is he just a pathological liar? This is bizarre. Or narcissism. You think narcissism?
I think so.
Like he, narcissism in that he...
Like he wanted to be important, be the center of the attention.
And that no one would call him out because of his political...
Exactly right.
Wow. That's... Oh, man, I can't. That's amazing. We have this, in addition to this story, we were talking about the Daniel Penny story earlier and how, you know, he's now being charged with manslaughter for the choking death of Daniel Penny. And this made me think, I'm going to pull this story up, because this is, you know, Alvin Bragg, a Soros-backed prosecutor. It's, you know, completely accurate. Kim Gardner in St. Louis. We were talking about this with the Missouri AG last week. Another Soros-backed prosecutor, totally corrupt. She actually refused to prosecute a number of cases just because she did not like the St. Louis police. So she announced her resignation was on May 5th. She announced her resignation on May 5th. And her last basically big act in her office as prosecutor, St. Louis Circuit Attorney. So in St. Louis, and I lived actually not far from Cherokee Street in St. Louis, and there's always these big Cinco de Mayo parades that they have. And well, there were two people that ended up getting into a fight in the street, and people watching the fight from the sidewalk, apparently some people started pulling out guns and shooting. And on camera, there's literal camera and video photos of all of it. I'm not even exaggerating. There's literal video of people pulling out guns and shooting. There's actual photos of it. You can clearly see who they are. You can see what they got. And it was in broad daylight. It was 7:30 p.m. on a Saturday, but it was still light outside. There were two people injured. They're in stable condition. One was grazed upper thigh. Another woman was shot in the leg. One of the people waving a gun was in a Cardinals shirt jersey. I mean, you can see everybody. There was a woman who had a gun. She was waving. She's in white, looks like white leggings, white shoes, and an Adidas hoodie, waving a gun around. I mean, I just, I just want you to think of the McCluskeys and what happened with the McCluskeys when they just simply had their firearms on their property after a herd of people literally broke down a gate and trespassed on their private property, and on their private property was marching and screaming threats. And they just stood on their lawns with a gun, one of which was inoperable, and were terrified for their lives. They had been eating on their porch, and they were terrified for their lives. They get charged. But these people, everything that I talked to you, all this stuff I just told you about, people waving guns, just shooting. Ooh. No, in fact, the man and woman who were the two in the video, they were quickly identified because they were on video pulling a gun and shooting people. 33-year-old Amber Booker was one. Police had asked Gardner's office to charge her with two counts of first-degree assault and two more counts of armed criminal action. And Gardner's office declined to file any charges and released her from custody. Oh, yeah. She said that there was no evidence. She said there was a lack of evidence, despite the fact that she's on video. And I am not exaggerating. On video. I have the video and the stills. They're all over the web. And photos clearly showing it is her. Clearly showing in the video, it is her. She pulls a gun and never leaves her hands. And you can see her hands shoot the gun. And they said no. Gardner said she's not going to, they're not going to charge her. The McCluskeys stand on their front lawn to defend themselves. And they're charged. This woman in the middle of a street pulls out a gun and starts shooting people, injures two people, apparently, according to the reports. And there's nothing. I have no words. The editorial board of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch is one of the most left-leaning newspapers. I used to work for them. They had an editorial board headline: Gardner owes St. Louis an explanation for not prosecuting the shooter. She went after the McCluskeys, wouldn't go after this woman. On video, two people on video pulling guns and shooting. And Gardner's like, no, there's just not enough evidence. Tons of witnesses, video. Some of the witnesses who came forward are on the video. Oh my gosh. That's what happens with restorative justice.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right. So this Las Vegas woman is wanted after commenting under a news post about her case on social media. She has 7 DUI arrests, and she allegedly cut off her ankle monitor. She was taken back into custody after she posted on Facebook about it. She literally wrote on the Facebook post, quote, I never cut it off, 3 exclamation points. An officer cut it off when I turned myself in. They continue to release me. The traffic bureau responded. Then why not turn yourself in now? Let's get this sorted out tonight. Oh my gosh. Like what? She's like, okay. I mean, unless she was like cooperative, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how to look at that. So in the UK, they have this very dystopian system of traffic cameras, and they're using AI to spy on drivers inside of their cars. AI speed cameras. They want to catch motorists by seeing inside of their cars. Privacy advocates say, no, this is a Big Brother cash machine, which I agree. You don't sit here and you don't outsource law and order and justice, especially like this, to AI. This is why I'm against like the speed camera or the traffic cameras in the first place, like at the red light cameras. I'm against those in the first place because you always contest those. I would always, well, we don't even have them in Texas anymore, but anyway, this finance with Yahoo. Farmers are set to abandon U.S. wheat crops at the highest rate since 1917. Our wheat fields are so plagued by drought that farmers are now apparently poised to abandon crops. Highest rate in more than a century. They're going to harvest about 67% of their planted acres, says the USDA. They said that it would be the lowest harvest ratio since 1917. And it was a lack of moisture. They said that we'll see short wheat, thin strands, thin stands. Some wheat looks really good. They said a lot of them just aren't going to be harvested. So futures of hard red winter wheat that surged about 6.9% after data was released. That really is into Kansas and Oklahoma territory right there. City of Baltimore is suing Hyundai and Hyundai and Kia over they're basically too easy to steal. That's why they're suing. That's the thing. We have Stephen Yates coming up next. Stick with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
My father is in prison for telling the truth. My name is Sebastian Lai, and my father is Jimmy Lai, the media owner, publisher, writer, and pro-democracy campaigner. My father faces life in prison for publishing the truth, and he is a prisoner of conscience. He deeply believes in freedom, civil liberties, and human rights. It was these values that inspired him to start the newspaper Apple Daily. Because he said, without free and independent information, there is no freedom. As soon as my father began in media, he stood up to China. And China's leader targeted him for it. And then it got worse. As the pro-democracy protests swept Hong Kong, the authority crushed my father's business and put him in prison. This could mean I never see my father again. Authorities are cracking down hard on my father to send a message to him and others. I am proud my father stood up to China and stood up for democracy in Hong Kong. We have started the Free Jimmy Lai campaign to call for his immediate release and freedom. And we need your help.
That is Sebastian Lai, who is the son of Jimmy Lai, who was in the headlines quite a bit as China began taking over Hong Kong and cracking down on dissent. And then he went silent after they came in, shuttered Apple Daily, began cracking down on any press that had any semblance of independence. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you at the bottom of this third hour. And he was blasting just recently. Sebastian Lai was blasting all of these entities that were quiet on this. He was saying the UK government has been incredibly weak. He's been silent. His father's a British citizen like him. Jimmy Lai is in a Chinese prison cell in Hong Kong, but a Chinese prison cell. He was saying the Vatican is silent. Where are they on this? Jimmy Lai is a Catholic. Why are they not speaking out on this? This was something echoed by U.S. Congressman Mike Gallagher. He is chair of the House of Representatives Select Committee on the CCP, and he was slamming the Vatican for not standing up for Jimmy Lai. He says, I am also a Catholic. Where is the Vatican on this? The Washington Embassy for the Vatican did not respond to Reuters just a few days ago when they asked. It's incredibly troubling because as everything else happens and we focus on different aspects of the deterioration of relations between the United States and China, I think it's incredibly important to remember that one of the reasons that there was still anything coming out from Hong Kong for as long as it was because of Jimmy Lai. And he would not bend the knee. And if he couldn't bend the knee, they're going to break him. And that's why his son is speaking out and has been. Joining us right now, our very good friend, Stephen Yates, who's been friends with Jimmy Lai for quite a long time. At Yates Comms on Twitter is where you can find him. And this is his particular wheelhouse. He's the senior fellow at America First Policy Institute and chair of the China Policy Initiative. I wanted to get, Stephen, just your general thoughts about this, these recent remarks just from a couple of days ago, just last week. I was out on Friday, but just last week from Sebastian Lai asking, well, where's the UK on this? Where's the Vatican on this? I mean, he's a British citizen and he's a Catholic. Why are these two big entities not speaking out? One a country, one the Vatican. Why are they not speaking out?
Well, thank you, Dana, for covering this. I wish that everyone with any platform would share even just the bits that you did, because Sebastian is a very understated but still forceful representative for who his father is and the cause that he has sacrificed so much for. A lot of people won't know that Jimmy Lai rose from nothing, coming out of Cultural Revolution China, created a global clothing brand, gave that all up after the Tiananmen Square massacre because he committed the sin of supporting demonstrators there. And instead of sacrificing the thousands of jobs of ordinary Chinese people, he walked away from the billion-dollar enterprise he created and built a second billion-dollar corporation. And this is all not to brag about him being well off. It's to say, how many of us have struggled to sacrifice $100 or $1,000 for something we care about? He literally walked away from $2 billion enterprises because he loves the Chinese people, loves freedom, and above all else, loves his faith and will not walk away from the truth. And if that doesn't move you, then I just don't know where you are these days. And I hope that these audiences feel an ounce of shame, because the Vatican does need to speak out on this. I think that really the group think of, oh no, we're not in a Cold War, is what everyone tries to pull back from, because when we were in a Cold War, all of our leaders would speak out for the prisoners of conscience, especially the big well-known ones that got kind of in the itchy and scratchy spots of dictators around the world. And Jimmy is that. He's a problem for Beijing because he actually loves China, but he loves freedom and he loves faith too. And the commies hate that.
They absolutely do. Talking with our friend Stephen Yates at YatesComs on Twitter. The documentary about it came out a little while ago, but his remarks that we played, just to tell people who are watching the simulcast of the radio show, his son Sebastian Lai's remarks, just, you know, very recent. And you mentioned that not enough people are covering this story, which shocks me because Americans love a good story. Let's just talk about it superficially for a moment. Americans love a great story. I mean, this is kind of like one of those iconic stories that we retell each other and tell each other over and over again. We retell throughout history about like the founders and, you know, this historical icon or that historical icon. I mean, this was a guy who just kept creating things, giving it away. He proved repeatedly over and over again that he's willing to give it all up for liberty. He will stand with liberty. He will risk not seeing his son again because he believes in the principle of freedom so much. I don't know anyone in politics who would do that today.
Correct. I mean, he had the means to go anywhere and live a comfortable life forever and take his family, and they would never have to think of any need for the end of time. But he believed that he had benefited so much from those who had shared economic opportunity with him, for those who had shared faith with him. He was not born into faith. He was a convert and grew in that journey over time. He just felt like he had benefited so much from the blessings of the free world and the promise that he couldn't turn his back on those who sought it. And it's just such a telling example. We should be celebrating it. We should be moved by it because he has repeatedly done what people said could not be done. And one of the last things people keep saying can't be done is for the Chinese people to live under freedom and come out from under the Communist Party. And that is what has to happen if we're going to have peace in this world, if we're going to roll back some of the most draconian tools used against mankind in the history of mankind. You're looking at AI and the weaponization of technology and information to control and manipulate human beings. That's what the CCP is about. Jimmy was against that. He was for the free world, kind of going back to that old Apple commercial that everyone's probably forgotten about.
Yeah. And people, reporters used to like stories like this. I mean, there's been.
They used to like free speech.
They used to like free speech. I mean, this is like Pulitzer Prize winning stuff here that you could, you know, do a series on. And instead, they give out the Pulitzers for the Russian collusion, and you know, what this town hall or that town hall. That's kind of what they give these awards out for. It also seems like the United States is missing an opportunity, along with the UK, to use this as you know, really like a psychological warfare and help divide sentiment in China. I mean, I know that there's, you know, there is division, but it seems like this could be used for so much more, which I think Jimmy Lai would be okay with, you know, specifically because the end is freedom, and that would be part of the means. Why do we not see more of that, even from our own government? Are we just afraid?
Well, I think there is fear, but I think that there's an ideology that people in the establishment and ruling class have. And so if you're looking at someone who is tremendously dedicated by faith, his underlying motive is not greed, it's actually love. It's love for fellow Chinese people and wanting them to have the blessings of what faith brought him and commercial opportunity and growth brought him. He wants them to see the better side of their potential and be able to live it out the way he was so blessed to be able to live out. I mean, that is it, really what this is about, is a motivation that at its core is a love greater than mankind versus the ultimate atheistic, selfish man, which is the Communist Party. But unfortunately, too many Americans are walking down that path.
And that is a beautiful way to put it. This comes also, talking with our friend Stephen Yates, right as we see a Chinese naval flotilla led by a powerful destroyer. They've been on this 12-day circumnavigation of Japan's main islands as they prepare to host G7 leaders. Tensions simmer over Taiwan, and Japan's foreign minister has been warning, look, China and Russia are increasing their military collaboration. I just don't know if anyone in Washington's listening, Stephen.
Well, all the chatterbugs in D.C. try to say that, you know, diplomacy is back and the adults are in charge and our allies trust us again and all that's great. I mean, I've come back to D.C. from the other side of the world to learn this fabulous news. I just regret that it's completely divorced from reality. It used to be that the Chinese would have to be careful not to be so provocative around international gatherings. They didn't want to let their fangs show and for people to see this brusqueness in their real nature. We used to be concerned about them operating around Taiwan. Going around Japan is 10 times more provocative. We're so far past a wake-up point or a sobriety checkpoint in this. I've really been impressed with Japanese leaders who've been willing to speak truth to this. But, you know, holy cow, where are the Europeans? What about the Canadians? What all these people that have coasted on the free world's coattails, where are they in all of this? Because they're still looking for the next dollar. They're still looking for more manufacturing. And that's the shame that has to get broken.
Last quick question for you. Talking with our friend Stephen Yates at Yates Comms. You can find him on Twitter. Your predictions for G7, thoughts?
Well, I'm a deep skeptic on any organization that begins with a G and ends with a number. When those numbers get to be more than one or two, I think it becomes exponentially more pointless and less likely to achieve any meaningful outcome. And if you allow governments that want to kiss the ring of a communist emperor into that conversation, in advance, you can forget about anything meaningful being accomplished. And if they pray to the false god of weather on planet Earth, then I also doubt that they're going to do anything about securing supply chains, balancing against aggressive powers, and speaking up for those who don't have a voice. That's ultimately what this was supposed to be about. The free world, capitalism, the engines of growth and possibilities for mankind. I hope the G7 one day can find its soul in itself and come back to that. But till then, I will await the imminent boredom of the next few days of G7 meetings.
As will we all. And perfectly put, Stephen Yates at Yates Comms on Twitter. We're glad that you've had safe travels. We know you've been traveling quite a bit. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. It's very good to see you.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
And make sure that you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. I send lots of stuff out. And our contributor, Lorraine, always has some good pieces, too. I sent one out this morning just to kind of give you a heads up as to what I was doing Friday and what we have going on this week, because I got two kids that are graduating back to back. And my oldest son, he graduated from college on Saturday with a BA in political science, and he's got a gap year and preparing for LSAT. If they're now talking about getting rid of LSATs, which is a whole other topic. Preparing to study constitutional law, because after seeing everything that we've been seeing, whether it's people like Daniel Penny, or whether it's, you know, like we were just mentioning the McCluskeys in the context of Kim Gardner. Clearly there are natural rights that are being infringed upon. And as we have a greater disregard for self-preservation, or at least some in government's respect for self-preservation, I think we're going to need more people to do those kinds of things. And I'm very proud of him, because he did this even after his freshman year was cut really short. Because that's when the lockdown hit and they sent everybody home. Everything, foreign language classes had to be done online. Labs were done online. I don't even know how that happens. I've watched a number of kids his age that we knew. I'm friends with their parents. I watched one young lady who was trying to go into medical school, and it like railroaded her. I watched another drop out. They were going into veterinarian. They're going to be a veterinarian. They couldn't. I mean, it's, you can't do labs like that and have, you know, basically 6 months where you don't And it just railroaded everybody. And it was so hard for these kids, which is why it was really awesome to be in a giant auditorium with, you know, all of these young adults as they took the next step, because they really had to fight. And I don't think, you know, I've said before, I don't think college is for everybody. I think it's necessary for some instances. I think if you're going into law, I think if you're going into medicine, you know, I think if you're going into certain sciences, but it's not required. I don't think it's required. If my son wasn't going into this, I don't think it would be something I would have encouraged for him. But he knows what he wants to do. He got into that because of Parkland, because he watched everything play out from the Parkland Town Hall, and that's what started it. So, yeah, the left has a Frankenstein's monster in a way. So, today in Stupidity, Kane. Very proud of my son. Just wanted to say I'm very proud. Congratulations to him and all the 2023 graduates.
I second that. Now the contrast would be Biden, because there's nothing smart about this guy. He's all excited because he thought the border situation is better than it was expected. Just mind you, 10,000 per day over the past few days. So listen to this.
Things are going at the border, sir.
Much better than you all expected.
Holy crap.
Do you have any plans to visit the border?
No, I think.
Yeah.
Much better.
10,000 is better.
I am so confused about that. I'm going to be on my friend Jesse Waters' show tonight to talk about the Daniel Penny case, 6 p.m. Central Hour. Make sure you tune in, and we'll be back together tomorrow. Have a great night. God bless.